pigeons are trying to join in. Hopefully nobody will be able to hear them.
That's a good cold open.
That is, yes.
We must keep that.
We keep that. So have we got any follow-up from the last episode?
So Margaret Mead is the follow-up.
Margaret Mead.
So I wrongly quoted. I think that's the way you say
you
it.
Wrongly attributed.
I wrongly attributed Margaret Mead's quote about a group of thoughtful and committed citizens being the only thing that ever changes the world to somebody else, but it was Margaret Mead, who is a US anthropologist. And I've actually seen something this week about her that she said about a healed thigh bone being the first sign of civilization. And I think that's really beautiful.
That's amazing. I mean, I suppose the implication being that other people must have
cared for
that person.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. We haven't got time for that. But the quote I wanted to read today is a quote by David Graeber.
Is this a thing? Are we going to read a quote?
Well, a quote, a poem, a song, something wordy.
Excellent. We're forming our patterns and our habits for the show, so that's great.
Yes. So here it is. The ultimate hidden truth of the world is that it is something that we make and could just as easily make differently.
Ooh.
So I think that's something that we will cover in our conversation, which you will hear soon.
Yes. Excellent. Well, here we go.
Welcome to Manifesting Agency, a podcast where we talk to people who get shit done. I'm Esther.
And I'm Ian. And today we're talking to Kath Stewart, a retired GP who's very active in our local community in the town of Ilkley in Yorkshire, where we all live.
We had a great conversation with Kath, so let's listen to it.
Here she is. Well, let's begin by thanking you for coming. It's a bit experimental, this. We've not interviewed anybody yet. You're the first one. So thank you for coming and letting us experiment on you.
Okay, well, I'll be a guinea pig.
It's going to be a treat, I'm sure. Welcome, Kath.
Thank you.
So why don't we start off by asking you to quickly introduce yourself at a sort of tweet level of detail. We have tweets anymore.
I don't really tweet, but anyway, my name's Kath Stewart. I've lived in Ilkley for 25 years. I'm a retired GP. I have four children. I've been more active in the community, I suppose, since I retired.
Well, fantastic. And of course, Ilkley is the hometown of this podcast. So we have direct experience of some of the things that you've been involved in during your community activities. So we'll get to that, won't we?
Yes. We're recording live from Ilkley.
You know that recording live is a bit of an oxymoron.
We're recording from Ilkley.
Okay. Well, thank you for that introduction. And we are going to cover a bunch of... So,
can I just ask something?
I think you should please put us all out of our misery and ask something.
I just wanted to ask if you consider yourself to be a person who gets stuff done. Or is that something that you are like, I don't know?
I suppose I do. I get very impatient with people who find lots of excuses for not doing things. And so when I go to meetings, I end up often volunteering to do things because it just needs doing.
Just out of frustration.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's how I became chair of the Ilkley Labour Party.
Ooh. Well, that makes me want to ask, in what area of stuff are you not good at getting stuff done?
I'm not good at conflict. Mm. So I'm not good at dealing with things if it involves conflict with other people.
So you would avoid it?
I would definitely avoid it.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm totally down with that. I'm quite similar.
I don't think I am.
Well, then when we need to send someone into battle on behalf of the podcast, you've just volunteered.
I think that's a conversation for another time.
Yes, amen to that. So let's kind of rewind a bit. Can you share a story from times past when you started to see the beginnings of this mindset that you've developed around getting things done? Maybe a time when you thought, right, that's it. I'm going to shake things up.
The first thing that comes to mind, actually, is when I was at school and I had to choose what A-levels to do. And I couldn't do the choices that I needed. And I knew I wanted to go on to university to do medicine, but I couldn't arrange my timetable. So I had to go and see someone, and I explained. And they said to me, "What, you mean you want to be a nurse?" And I'm a stubborn so-and-so. And if somebody says something like that to me and I've said to them quite clearly, "No, I want to do medicine," it just makes me dig my heels in even more. So I did. I managed to do it. So I suppose that's the first thing I can remember.
And
that I would, yeah.
Who did you have to talk to? Sort of paint a bit of a picture.
Well, it was in the sixth form. And it was the sixth form at the same school I'd always been in. It wasn't in a new place. So they knew me. And I had to go and see the head of the sixth form and explain what the problem was. And the first person I saw wasn't that sympathetic. But fortunately, the second one, who was one of the chemistry teachers, I don't quite know what her role was because she wasn't head of sixth form. And I don't know how I got directed to her, but I did. And she absolutely got it. So I have to say the first person was a man.
Fancy.
And she got it, and she was the one that helped me sort it out.
So you didn't need one of those time travel devices like in Harry Potter to go back in time.
No, to two things
at the same time. I mean, that's a really great indicative story. And do you feel as though that stubbornness was always there?
Can I just say, I don't think that's stubbornness. I think that's determination, and I think it's different to stubbornness. I'm not saying you're not stubborn, but I think determination is the correct word in this instance.
Well, yes, maybe that's true. I think if you ask my mother, she'd describe me as stubborn.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I suppose stubbornness has some connotations, doesn't it? I always remember from Yes Minister, those irregular verbs. Sort of, you are stubborn, but I'm determined.
Yeah.
Was that determination kind of there already, or did you? Was it something you thought, well, I have to summon this now, or I can't do the thing I want to do?
No, I think it was just there, and I think when somebody says to me, "You can't do something," and there's no sensible reason why I can't do it, that is what kicks it off.
It ignites the agency.
Oh, I see what you did there.
I know that Kath was also present at Greenham Common. I'm not sure what year, but I just think that's really cool. At the Embrace the Base protest against nuclear weapons, is that right?
Yes, against the cruise missiles.
Really cool. I went to an exhibition by a Swedish artist, Monica Sue. It's quite hard to pronounce Swedish names. But anyway, she was also at Greenham Common. And yeah, there was a video of it and it was really inspiring.
I can't remember exactly which year it was, but it's when I was at university in Newcastle. So it must have been 81 to 84. And I think George drove the minibus down with a whole group of us women.
George is your partner.
George is my partner. And we went to Greenham Common and, yeah, it was fantastic.
So where did that come from? I mean, what made you think this is a really good idea? I mean, obviously, it's a massive thing at the time.
Well, I suppose we were quite involved with CND and it just seemed like a really stupid idea to cite nuclear cruise missiles in the home counties. I mean, that there wasn't any agreement then to disarm, it just seemed like a really bad idea. It seems a bad idea to put nuclear weapons anywhere, I think. So
So yeah. You had to do something.
Yeah,
about
had to do something.
I suppose what I'm curious about is that if you sort of looked at the spectrum of opinion that was around at that time, quite a lot of people agreed with that, but very relatively few of them did anything.
Well, I was a student, and that's the kind of thing you do when you're a student, oh, yes. Isn't it? I mean, yeah, it was very interesting. We, George and I, started a CND group on the estate that we lived in. So when we were at University of Newcastle, we didn't live in university accommodation, and the council had extra housing that they couldn't get rid of, so they let it to students. And we lived on an estate called North Kenton, which is quite a rough estate in Newcastle. And we put a great big CND sign in our window. I mean, we painted it. It was, I don't know, metre by a metre.
Wow.
And people started stopping us in the streets and talking to us about it, which was amazing. So we decided we would show a film at the local school. I can't remember exactly what the film was, but it was very, very staid, black and white. It was about what happened. Some of it was the government's own kind of propaganda films about what to do if there's a nuclear bomb, and it, you know, it's like hide under the table, and it was just ridiculous. And it was so, it was just using some of that and then explaining how ridiculous that was. And I mean, we had a hall full of people come to watch that. And I think if you'd said to anyone outside of North Kenton that that would have been possible, I think they would not have thought so. And we had quite a lot of youngsters, you know, school. Come along to it, and so that kind of started there, and Greenham was just
that's really
a stage further on from that.
I was just going to say that's really interesting, because it sounds like you were the instigator, and those people, and I think this is often the case, needed somebody to start doing something to then be able to follow, or just go and attend that film viewing, which then you don't know how that's influenced those people and what actions they've taken since then. That's really great.
It's like that TED talk that I always remember with the video of the dancing man.
Yes.
And he's all on his own dancing, and then it turns into a movement.
Yeah.
It's called, the TED talk's called How to Create a Movement.
Yes.
It?
Yeah.
So I'm going to press pause now and adjust Esther's microphone stand as she's slowly sinking lower and lower into her chair.
Which is hilarious, because I've previously said podcasting is very good for your posture. Yeah. And now it's the opposite.
The microphone stand is doing its revenge. Okay. And we're back. Maybe we should have commercial breaks. I don't think anyone will want to advertise with us with our three listeners. I suppose it would depend who they were.
Where were we?
Yes. So I really like that TED talk and that idea. And I think your story is a really great sort of illustration of that happening.
Do we want to maybe like fast forward to where we are now? To like more recent actions and doing of things?
We need a fast forwarding sound effect.
Yeah. I can try and do one.
Oh my God. Well, I think, Esther, you'll be doing all our special effects for the podcast from now on. If you can make a fast forward sound like that just off the drop of a hat, I think we're permanently set up. So maybe tell us about a recent or more recent project that maybe you feel proud of.
Or that you just had to do.
Well, I suppose that the one that we just had to do was to start Climate Action Ilkley.
So we are all members of Climate Action Ilkley. Why don't you talk a bit about that, how that started?
Well, it was in 2018, I think, and been having conversations with my kids, who were all late teenagers, early 20s, and talking about climate change and how awful it was. We went down to see friends of ours in Oxford, Andrew, who we used to live with in North Kenton in Newcastle. And we were talking with them when we were down there. And Will, one of my sons, was there. And he said, well, why don't you just do something then? And it was, oh, yeah, why don't we?
Well, they say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
So I think the first thing I did was I went to the annual town meeting of Ilkley Town Council.
An inspiring affair, I'm certain.
Absolutely. And for the first time, the town council had a Lib Dem councillor on it, Mark Stidworthy.
Steady on.
And I stood up in the meeting and I asked the town council what they were doing about climate change. And no answer came the reply for quite a while. And then Mark stood up and said, well, as you can see, it doesn't sound like we're doing anything. But if you've got any ideas, they would be gratefully received. So me and George wrote quite a lengthy document, which with hindsight is actually based around the One Planet Living framework, although I don't think we knew about the One Planet Living framework at the time. About things that could be done in Ilkley that would make the place more climate friendly and would help to reduce emissions. And we showed that document to Mark Stidworthy, who said, whoa, if you take that to the council, you'll frighten them off.
Their heads will explode.
Absolutely. So he suggested that we just go to the council first of all and ask them to vote on the fact that climate change was man-made and happening, and that they would support us to form an organisation that would help the council to deal with climate change, do things that would help with climate change in Ilkley.
And ever since then, the council has been dedicated to a programme of climate change mitigation?
Well, not quite, but I mean, it was a very interesting meeting at the town council. Because we'd done everything that we were told to do. We'd sent in the motions beforehand, and some members of the town council tried very hard not to hear the motion, and they wanted to rule it out and for all sorts of reasons. But fortunately, Mark Stidworthy objected to them and said, you know, this has all followed the proper procedures and we have to hear it. For some reason, they hadn't talked about it amongst themselves, so the Tories didn't know which way to vote. Quite a few of them abstained, including the mayor, when it came to voting about the fact that climate change was real and man-made. Because quite a few of them abstained and there were enough of the people there, it got passed. It all got passed.
And that was in 2018, is that right?
That was in 2018.
The council resolved that climate change was real and...
Yeah, and that they were going to support how, I don't know, but, they would support us to form an organisation that they could work with.
How did Climate Action Ilkley then come into being?
Well, I think somebody else who was at that meeting for something else came to see us afterwards and said they were very interested. And we started getting a few people sort of together to talk about it. We used to meet in the pub and talk about how we'd do it. And we agreed that we would form an informal, but a constituted organisation. And so that's what we did in, I think, September, October of 2018. We started really looking at that big document that we had produced and thinking about things that we could actually do in Ilkley.
Wow. And a lot of the projects have come from that, haven't they?
Yes.
Yeah, but they required this groundwork, which maybe almost seems like not a lot of action was happening, or it's not action that in the town was visible. It was very much underground, fertilizing the soil for all these projects to emerge now, and they are, and they're still happening.
So one of the first projects that I was really keen we started was the community orchard.
So what's a community orchard for those that have never met one?
Well, well, it's an orchard in a community run by the community or members of the community. So it's, yeah, an orchard is, I think, anything over five trees.
Okay.
So I used to wander around Ilkley thinking, oh, that'd be a nice place for an orchard. And I think I decided that I'd see if anybody else was interested. So I think I called a meeting, said, if you're interested, come along. That was at Bartat. And I think we had about five or six people came along. So we decided to pursue it. And I contacted Bradford Council, because they're the one with lots of land around here.
Hmm.
And my first idea that I went to them with was West Holmesfield, where the football pitches are, but they weren't happy about that. But so what happened was the parks manager, who's since retired, said, I'll come walk round Ilkley with you. We can spot some, you know, see what we think. So we did, and we identified the area where one of the orchards now is on East Holmesfield behind the rugby club.
Mm-hmm.
And we also identified the area of Wheatley Field in Ben Ridding, where the Ben Ridding orchard is. And he said, oh, yeah, you can do that. Yeah, you can have that. Go ahead.
That's so lovely. I hadn't realised that the parks manager had done that. He wasn't involved prior to that.
No.
Wow.
No, he wasn't. He was just really lovely.
Yeah, and just he small.
He also, while we were going around, he said, oh, you could put some vegetable beds there and you could do this. And it was lovely.
Wow, he had a vision.
It's such a shame he's retired.
That's interesting, because there's something in that about bringing other people along and getting them involved. What do you think was his motivation? What do you think made him want to help you in that way?
I think he was just a really helpful man, and I think he could see that these areas, all they were grass, you know, and there was nothing happening with them. It wasn't as if it was somebody's football. I mean, West Holmesfield was somebody's football pitch, and that was why it was a no-no. But it was like he could see that maybe it was just make it easier for the council. We don't have to look after them if somebody else does. I don't know. I don't think that was his only motivation.
No, I think he could see the vision shared. He shared in the vision that you had for an orchard, especially when you're talking about him suggesting vegetable patches.
Yes, yeah.
And I think, yeah, that's a really nice little story, because I think there are so many people who perhaps aren't in it for the full project, aren't the main instigator or the core part of the team, but there's a lot of times when one person can do one small thing and it just enables this whole series of actions which bring about something really great.
Do you think that's something to do with permission? Maybe giving other people permission to do something that they would like to do anyway?
Yes. I think it's like often it seems impossible to start something, but once it gets going, it's got its momentum, and then other people can, oh, and what about this?
Yeah.
That seems like the kind of project that it's very hard not to get behind. I mean, it seems like, you know, everybody probably likes an apple tree.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that apple trees are involved.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any resistance to that project?
There was, but I think really it was resistance from people who lived near West Holmesfield who hadn't got the message that it wasn't going to be in West Holmesfield and were objecting to it being in West Holmesfield. And when they realised that it had moved, they were okay with it. That was only the resistance. There was, it's not resistance, it's, I don't know, it's lag. Although I had the lower members of the council, Bradford Council, saying, oh, yes, you can do this, what I wanted was someone high up to say, yes, you've got permission to do this, so that once we'd planted the trees, they weren't going to come along and say, oh, no, you can possibly do that. We're pulling them all up again. And that was quite hard. It was very hard work trying to get somebody to actually put in writing, yes, you can do this.
So what do you think was stopping them? I mean, it, as I said, it's quite a hard project to say, no, that's a terrible idea.
I don't know. I mean, what I had to do was kind of pull strings, really. So I'd met one of the Bradford councillors who is on the executive, and he's head of one of the, well, he's head of the place department. It's got a fancy name. I can't remember what it is. Alex Rosshaw, his name is. Mm. And I'd met him because I stood for the town council as a councillor. And I didn't get in, but I met him there and at the count. And so I thought, I know, I'll just give him a buzz and see what he says. And he took it up for me and he found the person that I needed to give the permission. And even then it didn't happen. So I had to email him and say, please, Alex, is there a problem? And he said, oh, I don't know why it's not happening. Had to go and do some more, whatever. And then I got the email saying, yes, you can.
A desk visit. I'm just going to go and hang around near your desk until you sign this thing.
Good persistence there, I think.
Yes. And again, getting people on board and getting them to share your vision there.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think there's a lot that's quite a good skill to have.
I think, like you say, with something like an orchard, it's quite easy because a lot of people feel quite warm about having a community orchard.
Yes, and there are lots of people that get involved now with the pruning and other work.
Yeah. There were people that said, oh, it's never going to work. They'll be vandalised. But actually, they haven't been.
That's
one tree got broken. One tree out in all the two orchards, that's out of 50 trees.
Broken by a person or by the weather?
Yes, by a person.
Oh. It's interesting because I think there are always, whenever you want to do something and manifest a vision... I think there are always going to be people and maybe even part of yourself saying it's not going to work, and you just have to ignore them. Or and maybe sometimes it's helpful to listen to them and then say, well, actually, I know why that's wrong, or you know.
Well, if they're putting forward, if they've got reasons why they think that and then they tell you what they are and you overcome those things, then you know that's
I think that particularly they were talking about the Ben Ridding Orchard, and I think they were just wrong. They're just anti-kids, you know, it's this anti-social kids thing. But why would kids want to damage the trees? For me, that just... There was no reason why kids would want to do that. And so I just...
Yeah, you've got to give people the benefit of the doubt.
Well, I mean, 50 trees is quite a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're split between the two sites.
Yeah.
And we put tree guards, we put wire tree guards around the young trees so that they couldn't just be damaged by dogs or footballs or, you know, accidentally.
Yeah.
Because I felt that was far more likely to happen than somebody going around pulling them up or chopping them down or whatever.
That must be very satisfying to go to those places and see those trees that might not be there if the original idea hadn't been.
It is lovely. And the trees are getting a little bit bigger now and a bit more substantial. And a lot of them have had their tree guards taken down and it looks much more like an orchard.
Have you had any apples?
Yes, that's going to be my question.
There have been apples on the trees. I haven't had any apples yet. I mean, one other thing that people said when we were doing it, well, people will just steal the apples. I said, well, it's not stealing if it's a community orchard, is it?
People can have the apples.
But the problem is, I think, is that people are picking the apples before they're really ready to be picked. And that's an easy problem to deal with because we've now got notice boards in the orchards and we can put when the apples will be ripe and, you know, okay to pick.
Help yourself to an apple after.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, for this tree, 7th. Wait until this time. But for this tree, you can start.
Zooming out a bit, I'm kind of stealing this question from Esther because she's very keen on it, but I've got there first. So what have you had to say no to in order to be able to achieve the things that you have achieved? Tell us a story about that.
I phrased this question as like the necessity of no, because in order to be able to do things, you have to say no to things. And it's something that I struggle with. So yeah, can you think of anything that you've had to not do in order to be able to do some of these projects that you have done?
Well, I suppose, yeah, I don't do a lot of housework. My house isn't clean and tidy and spick and span. I detest sitting through interminable meetings. So I try to avoid those kinds of things.
She's still looking okay at the moment. Don't worry.
Yes. But I suppose I'm lucky because I'm retired and I have lots of time.
You said no to work.
I did say no to work. That is well, true. Yes.
Paid and paid.
Enough is enough.
Paid employment, not for me.
Well, yeah.
Pension, yes, please.
Yeah. Just imagine what people could do if there was a universal basic income.
Well, many things.
Yes. Well, but they would have to believe that they could do them first, wouldn't they?
Would
I was
going
to...
Tell us some more about that, Esther.
Well, they just have to believe in their own agency, yes. I think.
Before they can then manifest their ideas.
Yeah. Sorry, I'll stop.
We've covered the title now. I think we're good. Is there a story about some situation where it was hard to keep going, but you had to sort of overcome that kind of resistance that sometimes arises?
In any projects you've worked on?
Well, I think in all of them, I mean, it sounds like setting up the orchard was very straightforward, but it took a long time. It took a long time, you know, of kind of thinking about it, talking to people, trying to find the right people to speak to, and yes, trying to get people on board with it. So it wasn't, oh yeah, we're going to set up an orchard, that's it, we're doing it. It took quite a while to find Mel, the parks manager, who finally gave us the go-ahead on those sites.
It always takes longer than you think,
Yeah, even when you take it into account that it's going to take longer than you think.
Yeah.
Even when you try to compensate for it. But Was there a time during that where you considered throwing it all in?
No, never. Has there been a time? I don't think so. No, I don't think so. There are various projects that I'd like to do that are on the back burner, but I haven't absolutely given up on any of them, really. Mm.
That's fantastic. That makes me happy to hear that.
That doesn't necessarily mean that they will move to the front burner, but it's just that I think, well, that's something that really needs doing. And I haven't got the time or the energy right now, but it is something that I will consider again.
Yeah, well, it's not as though there's an enormous queue of people doing all those things. So.
No, that's the standard problem, isn't it? It's kind of getting enough people that really want something to happen together to make it happen.
Yeah. So what are you up to now? What's on the front burner now?
Well, I have just started a new campaign for the Climate and Nature Bill.
Ooh.
Which started life as the CEE bill.
Oh, I remember that, yes.
A couple of years ago. And it's a private members bill that Caroline Lucas actually took before Parliament the first time round. It's now on its third iteration and Alex Sobel has just taken it to Parliament as a private members bill. And the idea is, it's based on the bill that got the Climate Change Act passed. Right. So you just keep going, you keep doing it, you keep presenting it to Parliament until you get it through. And you gradually build up the momentum from all the MPs until you get enough of them on board.
Yeah.
And so I have to say, I think Climate and Nature Bill is a better name for it. I think we might be able to get more people on board. So currently, it seemed like a good time to restart it because coming up, it's sometime within the next probably 9 months. So anyone can support the bill. You can sign up on the Climate and Nature Bill website as an individual, as part of an organisation, as a business, as a prospective parliamentary candidate, and as a parliamentary candidate. So we're going to be lobbying locally, businesses, organisations, prospective parliamentary candidates, and our MP.
Love it. Great. Fantastic. Call to action.
A project that's on the back burner at the moment, very much on the back burner, but it really very much needs doing, is a local energy company.
Ooh.
So if anyone out there is interested in starting a renewable energy company in Ilkley, then please get in touch.
Or just do it.
So if someone is sitting there listening to this, thinking, I wish I could do something, but... what would you share with them as advice to help them get off the starting blocks, so to speak?
I think find another one or two people who really understand and support what it is you want to do. Because I think when there's two or three of you, you can bat ideas backwards and forwards between you. You can develop your ideas. You can come up with creative ways of doing things, different people to approach, and just keep thinking about it. Keep thinking about, I mean, one of the things I have done since The Orchard is look at how we started The Orchard and how we did the project, thinking about, you know, what we actually did when we did it. And it was quite interesting. And I've used a mural canvas about starting up and thinking about who you would contact and what you are offering and what benefits it would have for people locally. And you can develop those things. And then when you've done that, you've got a much more solid idea to take to someone. I mean, even if it's just to take to the council to ask for support, either monetary support or just backing from them.
Perhaps we could share that in the show notes, if you would feel comfortable sharing that with people.
Yeah.
Just because it sounds like that would be quite transferable for other projects. So if anybody has something they were working on that they wanted to.
We can share a link to that, can't we? For those who are wondering, mural is a whiteboarding, sticky notey, templatey kind of thing. Which works very well for this kind of stuff. So we'll do what we can to share a link to that in the notes. So, is there anything else in your list, Esther?
In my list, which doesn't exist. No, I don't. I don't think so. I think that was a really nice conversation.
So I've got one more thing.
Okay.
If people only took one thing away from listening to this, what would you wish it would be, Kath?
I think don't get disheartened. Just keep going. If you've got an idea that you want to put into practice, you can see the benefits of it, just keep going. Don't let other people dissuade you. There are always umpteen reasons why you shouldn't do it. But if you think you should be doing it, then you should be doing it. And just keep going.
What a fabulous piece of advice. Thank you very much. And thank you so much for agreeing to do this and letting us experiment on you. Speak to you.
How was it?
Yeah, it's okay.
Nice.
So when we're building our case for the next person, we'll just be able to quote you on that. It was okay. Said Kath. Hardly hurt at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Woo. No, thank you. Thank you. Oh, we're so British. 't that great?
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
It's always nice to hear the sound of laughter.
Yes, but I think, I'd like to laugh No, I wouldn't like to laugh less, but I'd like to hear the sound of my own laughter less. Sorry.
Which is why I do the editing. I get to hear all the sounds all the time. So, can you share anything that really resonated with you from that conversation?
Yes, loads of things.
Loads of things?
Loads of things. I'd just like to say I wish I had an apple because there was lots of apple talk and I just think the sound effect of biting into an apple would have just been perfect. Anyway, I don't have an apple.
You are in charge of sound effects now. You do know that, don't you? After your fast forward or rewind that you did earlier, you're now the sound effects chief.
Yes. It's a new role, but I think I've got potential.
What do you think you bring to the organisation in your role of sound effects? Yeah. Obviously, sound effects is the answer to that.
But so the apple talk, Kath said something about the orchards and how people sometimes pick the fruit when it isn't quite ripe.
She did, yes.
And that, to me, sounded like a really good metaphor for projects that you have a lot of passion or like desire to do, but perhaps there's other things going on that mean that project isn't quite ripe and you need to just not abandon it, but just give it some time, which is exactly what happened to us.
Yeah, you're talking about the fact I bought the domain name manifesting.agency.
A year ago,
and then we didn't do anything. Now we have.
Yeah, now it's ripe and we're eating it. Anyway, yes, that was That was the apple stuff. And then one of the things that really stood out to me was the relationships that Kath mentioned, but only sort of briefly. So there was Mel, the parks manager. There was Alex, who helped get the written permission for the land use. And it just seemed to me like some of these were very relationships that had just come about very organically and through just contact. And the word that comes to mind to me is like allyship. And I think with Alex, she was saying, oh, when I ran for the town council and I didn't get in, I happened to meet this guy called Alex and he then helped me do this thing, which then enabled this whole project to happen. And I think that's just a nice little story about how even if things don't work out on one project, you will have gained things that you might not realise at the time, which will help you in the future. And whether that's relationships or contacts with people who are helpful or knowledge and experience.
Yeah, I think that's a really great takeaway. And it kind of makes me think about, to go a bit businessy, which I'm sure you'll love me for, but there's this whole thing of stakeholder management where you need to identify these people who are able to sort of open the doors for you. And they're not, you know, as you say, not team members, but they're really critical. And getting them on side in the way that Kath did is absolutely critical. Because if she'd got in a strop with the council and rung up and had a go, you know, that might have been, or not, given what she said about conflict, but you know, it might be satisfying in the moment, but actually getting people on side and working with them.
Yeah, building bridges, not burning them. Absolutely. Even when maybe in private you might like to.
We're obviously not talking about Kath's bridges there. She seems to be a non-burner.
She's a builder. And then the second thing, or the third thing I wanted to say or talk about was I just wanted to do a tiny little plug of a project of mine.
Surely not, Esther, surely not.
So I am involved with a movement called Culture Declares Emergency, and I have declared a climate and ecological emergency with them, and you can too.
Yes, and we will make sure there are links in the show notes to Esther's declaration and also to Culture Declares.
Yes, there's a local hub for Wharfdale and Airedale, so that's there to support people in their declarations.
Well, we'll include a link to that too. Yes. So fantastic.
I think that was everything.
Should I ask myself what my takeaway is?
What about you, Ian?
What about me? Well, I thank you for asking. I think the thing that most struck me was Kath's early sort of statement, and she said her mother would have described her as stubborn. And we talked about the kind of differences between stubbornness and determination, and I really, really like that. And stubbornness, I think, has a connotation as of a kind of refusal to change your course of action or your perspective, even if there's really compelling and good reasons to do so. It's a bit unreasoning and a bit kind of holding on for holding on's sake. Whereas determination is quite different. I feel that determination is about persisting in a journey towards a goal. And then if one way of doing it doesn't work, instead of just continuing stubbornly to batter away at that, you step back and you find another way around.
Yeah.
And I think that really made me think about the difference between those two things. And actually, I think Kath's determination really, really shines out, I think, a lot more than any stubbornness.
Yeah.
That, I thought, was a really good point to make.
Yeah, definitely. That makes me think of a poem. Can I mention the poem? It's a poem by a Spanish author who I can't remember the name.
But we understand it.
We'll put it in the show notes. And the line I'm thinking of is, there is no path. The path is made by walking. So if you're determined, instead of like sticking to the line that you think is there towards your goal, you create new lines and new ways, new paths.
Yes, that's fantastic. I always love that kind of idea of a path. That's what they call it. There's a word for it, like a discovered or something path, where, you know, it's like there was an example of a university and they didn't put a path across a particular thing. And then
desire lines.
Is that it? Yeah. All the students walking backwards and forwards decided where the path was going to be, and then they can just make it into a real path once they figure out where people want to walk. I thought that I'm not sure how connected that is to everything else, but your poem reminded me.
Yeah, very much. So I want to do a project around desire lines, an art project at some point in my life when I have time.
Yes, and unfortunately, all your time is spent recording a podcast. So
no, I have many.
Many projects.
Yes, on the go.
So being a nerd, I just thought I would I would put the transcript or a transcript from the interview into ChatGPT. I said to it, if you had to summarise the learning from our interview with Kath in three key words, what would they be and why? And the three words that it came up with were, number one, persistence.
Woo!
Number two, community. And number three, adaptability.
Love it. I wrote down three words when I was...
Did you?
Yeah, I put...
So we're now... Having gone for the robotic three words, we'll now go for the human ones.
I put allyship, apples and action. I just decided three words beginning with A.
Oh, well.
And adaptability or whatever that...
Adaptability, yes.
Yeah, that, I'll have that as well.
Well, it does begin with A, so I think. Yes. So thanks again to Kath for joining us, and we'll be back with another episode
soon. Yeah, thanks, Kath. Also, just quick shout out to Andrew, who was mentioned very briefly. Andrew introduced me to a show called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Best show ever. Go watch. Let me know what you think, Ian.
Esther has already made me watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And now I know that it's Andrew that I need to be having words with. Seasons!
You're the only person who's actually watched it off my recommendation. So thank you, because, yeah, I've told a lot of people and none of them have actually watched it.
Well, it's not a small commitment.
Mm.
Excellent.